how many copies of 13 Ghosts by Scream Factory have you pre-ordered?
Oh, I told Charlotte about that.
She's not going to get it, is she?
Well, she was on. Yeah. No, she genuinely is.
She doesn't have an American Blu-ray player.
I said that. I was like, it's only US. And she was like, yeah, but I can still get it. I was like, okay.
Just keep it away from my stuff.
Fair enough.
Oh, your house is going to have two copies of that film.
The weirdest thing was that, you know, when we were talking about it, but when you messaged me, I'd only just looked up. Well, not looked up. I'd only just, like, stumbled on something on Reddit about 13 Ghosts. And I was like, oh, speak of the devil. Oh, it actually reminds me of something. You were, you know, when I first came back, you were laughing because I'd met Satan.
Yeah.
So I hadn't told you this story. I don't know how long I was there for, to be honest. Like, I don't think time works the same over there. But it was me, Thumb and Dave, Dav, we were having a drink at one of the many taverns. Right. One of the 40 taverns.
Sound like that bad of a place to be, perfectly.
No, I liked it, but I mean, I don't really like... Not the way it's gone now. Do you know what I mean? Let's bring the taverns back, shall we? I'm with them there. Like, should we get the taverns, these... But we were... I can't remember what it was we were talking about, but I said the phrase, oh, speak of the devil.
Right.
And, you know, like, I said that to you, straight away, you know exactly what I'm on about.
Yeah.
And they both looked at me, like, what, weird, and then looked around and went, oh, is he here? And I was like, I'm sorry, give me a second here. I was like, are you saying Satan is a real, like, person, a real thing? And they were like, well, kind of. And, they were kind of like, oh, thank fuck he's not here. I was like, what, is this guy a dick or something? Like, yeah, he's a dick, but just, you know, not in Earth's terms, where he's like the ultimate dick, I suppose, in some senses.
Right, right.
So this was quite strange. This was like really strange. Like, if I could prove this, Christianity maybe could fall apart. That's how bad it is. I was like, who's got... I was sitting there, they were giggling, and I was like, you don't know how important this would be back then. They go, oh no, we know. But it's quite funny, Christianity. I was like, why? Because it's shit.
Is that a direct quote?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, they were quiet. So anyway, there's this... I mean, I met him eventually. I think it was a couple of nights after.
You met Satan?
Yeah, but it's not... Satan's kind of essentially like a placeholder. So, oh God, this is like... It's really... This is like going into their backstory now, to be honest with you. They had to explain this to me. So essentially what happened was, there was someone ages ago. And I don't mean like, you know, me and you say, oh, I saw ages ago. I mean, I do mean like ages, eons like ago. Eons, yeah, right. Like, and they had someone that was, it was a lesser demon, which made me laugh because I was like, oh, he's a lesser demon. He's the demon in our terms. And he was some sort of lesser demon, but he was involved with whatever the fuck was going on. There was still shit going on with, you know, hell and the other ones.
Yeah, the
you know, they've been around for fucking ages. Literally. And so that whatever the conflict was between them two at that point was happening. Essentially what happened was, from what I can gather, is this lesser demon, he betrayed hell in some sort of way. And he gave either information or something to the other ones. Hell finds out about it, obviously go ape shit. They're like, wait a minute, sorry. What's you've done what? And you know, so this lesser demon, they make a trial for him. Yeah, they've got caught in hell. They made a trial for him, and they were essentially, you know, like, you know, what the fuck, my wife done this anyway. He was obviously proven guilty. Another kind of you know, like old timey thing that I noticed from hell. This is essentially, you know, kind of what makes me think a lot of this is seeped through. They ended up where they said, we will give you a trial by combat. But, you know, because of the extent of the crime that he'd committed, they, not illegally, you know, well, I don't know how it works, to be honest with you. I don't really know the law, to be honest with you. I know a little bit about what they told me, but they essentially set it up so that the trial by combat was essentially a suicide. You know, he'd pissed them off that much that they were like, so, you know, when the trial came to an end, it's like, right, we're gonna give you a chance, But you've got to go up against this fucking guy. Now, this guy, they got to do it. Well, not guy, but this, and he was a fucking hired demon. Thumb was actually, like, really, like, you know, like with a rock star or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
You know, it was all like, he was really, like, fucking excited about talking about him. He was like, oh, no, he was fucking awesome and all this shit. This was essentially, like, a hired demon who was, you know, they said to me, we would describe it as he was, like, almost godlike. So right. he was very powerful in whatever sense of the term, you know, is in hell. And they basically said, right, so you're against this guy, which there was obviously no chance of the lesser demon winning against. So they have the trial by combat. The higher demon absolutely wipes the floor with who would eventually become Satan. And he pulls his, what he did was, he, you know, obviously in trial by combat, you have to have a kill and blow. The godlike guy, he went even further and said, I don't like this guy that much that I'm going to rip his wings off so that he was forcibly, like, his wings were forcibly removed.
Right.
Like, he battered him, ripped his wings off in front of everybody. Fuck. And then essentially said, I'm not even going to kill you because history needs to know how much of a cunt you are, basically.
Jesus.
So he ripped his wings off, left it, and he gave him the name. He renamed him Satan, the devil. And they, you know, that has essentially, in hell terms, become over the eons and the ages, that has stuck. So, you know, like, you know, people they didn't like, people are like, oh, you know, fucking Satan over here. You know, like we do, like, oh, fucking silly bollocks over here.
Yeah, yeah.
That was essentially, Satan was essentially, it became a very high, it's like cunt to Americans, oh, I would say, right. Do you know what I mean? It's like the or whatever, the worst insult you could say. So the guy that I met was a Satan, but he's essentially been branded that.
Okay.
I don't know what he did. I think it was something like nowhere near as bad as fucking, but they regarded it. They even, it was funny because they even call him Satan the sequel. You know, because it was like, he's like the biggest one to have this. But yeah, exactly.
Satan
like
2, Electric Boogaloo.
Literally, yeah. They were like, I think it was Dav that even said to me, he was like, you know, like bad sequels. And I was like, yeah, that's him. I was like, oh my God. I don't know who you like less, this guy or the first one. But a fun fact, this is where the Christianity thing comes into it. A fun fact was, this story, because the higher demon that essentially like branded him this, he said, I want history to remember. What that fucker did, didn't like this guy that much. He already ripped his wings off and made him like essentially a pariah in this world. He seeped the story through into our world. He wanted him to be branded in like all of history, right. Not just his history. He wanted like this story out, you know, this guy's a cunt. That is where the War of Heaven story comes from and how Satan was cast down.
Oh, right.
This story was Satan was cast out. He was cast out. It was essentially like, you're Satan now. You're Satan the devil.
Yeah.
Fuck off, you're a cunt. He seeped that story through Chinese whispers in our world.
And it came to exactly. Lucifer, yeah. The fallen angel.
Can you imagine if I could prove that? I mean, can you imagine if I could prove hell itself? But, yeah. It's just like, it would rock the very foundations of this world.
If only more people listened to our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, maybe one day stuff will. But that's, you know, like, that was the kind of story that showed me how serious it was down there. You know, like, even as I was having a laugh with these lot, there's still some fucking weird shit going on down there.
I mean, it is hell.
Yeah, literally. Which I guess that's where that comes from in the Bible. Do you know what I mean? Hell obviously was in part, but, you know, you'd have been telling the story of this, you know, trial by combat, and the place would have came into it. So that's where that's came from, and they spelt it differently. Yes. Some pretty fucked up shit, mate. The funny thing is, as well, the lesser demon, the one that was the first Satan, he genuinely looks like a stereotypical Satan, like hoofed feet,
oh,
circular horns. He looks like a fucking badass, but apparently he was a bit of a ponce, and that's why he was trying to get in with the other ones, apparently. Because he wasn't regarded very highly in his sector, I guess. I don't know. It's a little story from hell for you.
I like how casually you say that.
Well, I've got to be careful what I say, don't I? Like I said to you before. So, like I said, I'll probably sprinkle in stuff when I can. But as far as it is at the minute, I've got to be very...
Hush, hush.
Yeah. welcome back to the next episode of the Radio Nasties podcast with me, Vic, and unfortunately, as usual, Richard.
Yo, what up? We're two cool guys recording the podcast.
Two cool guys recording a podcast wouldn't have said something like that. So we're kind of back on our regular format at the minute for the foreseeable future.
Yes, your pick. First pick of the season.
Yes. And this pick links in quite well with the top 10 we've just done.
Okie doke.
This was a film, obviously, from my top 10 list. Quite a recent, very recent movie. 2019. It's The Headhunter.
Yeah. I think you teased that you might pick this one.
Yeah. It's kind of like a little, very low budget film. Only 30,000. So that's enough to make a film, I suppose, isn't it?
That's wads.
Yeah, loads. Yeah, kind of like a little indie, low budget movie, which won me over because of how much they get into it, considering the cost.
Yeah. Well, like, what can you fucking buy with 30 grand these days?
Exactly. Even if you don't like the film, I think you'll definitely appreciate like the sets and the costume design and you know, even some of the effects. Some of the effects, obviously, it's low budget.
Yeah.
They're very but like the set design and the costume design was, this guy that's in it has probably got the coolest armor I've ever seen. Like, it genuinely is one of my favourite armors ever. I was like, this guy just looks... And you don't even see him fight, really. And it's like, this armor's awesome.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so we're going to get into The Headhunter, and then we'll talk about it. I guess that's the point of the podcast.
We'll be back. We'll be right back.
Oh, God. So... That's The Headhunter.
Fucking gay.
Gay film.
That's what I'm going to do. Eli Roth's review.
The rest of this year, I'm just going to pick gay films. These films. You see these films I've picked? They're all faggots.
Jesus Christ.
Eli Roth. Eli Roth will start a fun podcast. What? This dialogue is incredible.
If only they had more animal analogies.
Yeah. Podcasts are like animals.
We've lost our connection with audio dramas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, The Headhunter.
Very unique.
Yes. Very. I don't know if you're taking the piss there.
Well, I'm it's not a bland film. It's not a... it's not cookie cutter. It's not like...
No. No, I think it's very unique.
I can't really say any... films I've seen
exactly
like it. It's not, yeah.
It's like a genre mash in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a day in the life of an RPG character.
Yeah,
like when D&D. you turn off Dark Souls,
that's what we do,
this
yeah.
is what he gets up to.
Yeah, got some heads. When you boot up the game again, oh, I've got these while you're away.
Oh, cheers.
Made you some coin. Do you want to control me now? A lot of people have compared this to, like you said, like an RPG or a D&D kind of thing, or Skyrim, which I don't really get. I mean, it's got some monsters in it and some Viking looking people, but
man in armor.
Yeah, there's like, I don't understand what
he does. Shout Fossrodar quite a lot.
I was just about to say, nobody shouts Fossrodar in this, so I don't understand where they're getting that.
Has he at any point taken an arrow to an E?
Possibly.
He probably has.
Yeah,
to
I was
be
gonna
fair.
Say, I mean, that potion's probably gonna sort that right out. But we shall get into the film, I suppose.
Yeah, if we have to.
Keep continuing, you know, what we've been doing on the podcast since we started. Kind of the point of the podcast.
Point of the podcast.
Talk about a film.
Say it, shit. Go home.
Yeah, yeah. Film's a faggot. See you later. So it opens with a shot on the I was going to say main, but the only character in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other characters, but they're not really characters. No. They're kind of just
there
for the plot.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's kind of sitting in the snow. One thing I want to say to you, because obviously we've just watched it, so if any of you do go away and watch it, think of this. I've watched this film 5 times now. What stuck out to me is the opening shot, you know, of him kind of sitting in the snow, very much resembles one of the later shots of the film.
True. Yeah.
And it's kind of like shot as in a way where, you know, he's kind of sitting there motionless And then it kind of leaves it 5-10 seconds, and he takes a breath, and you're like, oh, this guy is actually alive.
Well, my first note was, Beardy looks fucked.
Yeah, he does look fucked. He looks fucked for like this whole film, the poor man. The poor, poor
he's
man.
He's got a pretty miserable life.
He's got nothing, really, in he? And his daughter's dead. Yeah. So, yeah, he's essentially just sitting there, assuming he's waiting for something, which we hear. You can hear noises in the woods around him. And there's like a little trap, you know, kind of like a little, I don't know what they're called. You know, it's like a tripwire, but it's not. It's a tripwire with like, you know, them. I think he's got like little bits of bones on them. So that if anything touches the wire,
yeah.
It jingles. Obviously something goes over the wire, which we don't see. He stands up, walks off screen, draws his sword, walks off screen. You can hear a slight scuffle. And then when he returns, his sword's covered in blood. And this is essentially the way the film gets around the monster fights.
Yeah, you never actually see him fighting.
It's either off screen or you can hear it.
Yeah, you hear like sword clashes and the sword going through body parts and just general noises.
Yeah, this was the main thing that turned off, from my research anyway, that turned off the majority of the people who didn't like this film.
I get it, but it was made with $30,000.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I don't think it's taken away anything from the film by not seeing these.
No.
And
I mean, it'd be cool to see it, but it's not.
Of course it would. Necessary. But there was one point that, because I watched this with Trav, obviously, he brought up, he was like, he said, I'm enjoying this more because I'm imagining the fights.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, I find usually in fight scenes in films, 8 times out of 10, the fight scene doesn't live up
to your
what
expectations.
I've just... Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. I mean, they're usually good,
yeah.
But I could imagine a better fight because of that. And probably that's because of the budget. So
yeah.
I assume...
I'm sure if they had more money, we would have...
At least more monster fights. Yeah, the guy, I think he's just called the father.
Nobody... I just refer to him as dude.
Yeah,
I just think of this as a. Could you imagine if it was a Jeff Bridges?
Oh god, it'd be great. He just doesn't want to do.
I just don't like the Eagles.
Yeah.
I just don't like killing monsters.
I just don't like fucking werewolves, man. But he comes back onto screen. His sword's covered in blood. He's obviously killed the monster. I think it's the only time we hear another character talk, which is his daughter. And I think she just says something like "father" or something, just to get his attention.
Yeah,
he goes over. Kind of tucks her in. And then he has like a little teary-eyed moment. I mean, I don't know if that's... I mean, obviously it's supposed to imply to us that... Well, I mean, the voiceover in the next scene tells us, but
yeah.
It's supposed to imply to us that this daughter isn't around anymore. He gets some blood on his hand or something, obviously from the monster fight. And I think the camera zooms in on the blood on her blanket, which some symbolism, I'm guessing, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because as soon as after we get like a little...
Mom, yeah, a little voiceover.
Like, I always thought I'd be able to protect her,
yeah.
And whatever took her is still out there.
And this is essentially like his only reason to live now.
Yeah, it's like his motivation.
Around. Yeah, he's waiting around. He's being a monster hunter in order to find the monster that killed his daughter.
Yeah.
So we get the opening credits, and I really like these credits because it kind of shows you different bits of his cabin. And helps on a rewatch, but like it shows you very important things in the credits that you go, you know, you rewatch and you go, oh fucking hell, you know. Which there's a lot of this in this film. They do like several shots where they'll show you something and you don't really know why they're. It's shot really well as well. So like you see the shots and you're kind of like, oh that's lovely, and then you realize later on it's like, oh that's why they were showing us that. So yeah, I really like the credits and it kind of shows off. Some of the practical effects.
Which are fucking cracking.
Yeah, like, especially for this budget.
For $30,000.
It's ridiculous, like I'm saying, yeah. So then we get the central start to the film where it is, like you said, majority of the film is like a day in the life of a monster hunter. So, you know, he sits by the fire, he's cooking his meals, he checks his... There's which becomes very important. He checks a trap that's kind of in the... Like a little brook that runs past his house or something. But something's caught in it, he pulls it out. It looks like some sort of fucking river monster or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he catches it and he
takes something out of it,
yeah,
he?
He takes something, which I'm he uses it for his potions. And he pulls it kind of like from right inside the skeleton.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming this is something he needs to use for the potion. But he takes the thing, you know, that he pulls out and he puts it into this little jar thing. And he begins making a little potion. I think he's like boiled some shit. It looks like shit.
It genuinely, maybe it is.
Yeah, like maybe it's monster
maybe
shit.
Maybe it is a shoe.
Maybe it is a shit. But he goes out to his fire. He's got like a fucking witch's cauldron burning. Comes in and he kind of like sieves what he's cooked up into these like three jars. And then he locks them up afterwards. These are very important. But we also get introduction to the main antagonist of the film, which is the window. The window is, I'm guess, broken. It doesn't shut properly, so it swings when the wind blows it. And he has one of his like jars of powder or something that he uses for his potion. It knocks the jar over, and he's kind of looking at it like, oh, that's a minor nuisance. And he's like,
it looks like hot chocolate. Maybe it literally is just hot chocolate. It's not potion. It's just
hot chocolate. Just like hot chocolate. Hot chocolate at the end of the night. I've got a daughter. I'm gonna have a hot chocolate. Do you know what I mean?
It's like you don't need a dead child to justify. Yeah. You can just have a hot chocolate, mate. Yeah,
but I mean, my daughter is dead, though. So I mean, I'm gonna.
Do you think he let her daughter die? Like, if I let her die, I could have hot chocolate.
I could have all the hot chocolate.
I wouldn't have to share it with her.
Yeah. Speaking of the devil, though, he goes and he checks on his, which becomes a regular occurrence through the film. He goes and checks on his daughter's grave, and these are kind of like his moments to essentially talk to someone, I guess.
Yeah.
He's got nobody besides his horse. And
for now,
yeah. And so you know, he kind of goes to his daughter, but he's so like shut off. Like he goes and he talks to his daughter, and it's kind of like he's just sitting there to have some sort of company. And then he has this like arrowhead, and I think he says that this. I did look at it on the subtitles, but I can't remember.
He says it's from somewhere.
Yeah,
it's
from the city, the ringed, blah, blah. The ringed city, or the ringed city, so, or something
like that.
The last arrowhead from the ringed city, and this arrowhead is apparently supposed to help ferry the souls of the dead to the afterlife.
But he even says like, I don't believe in it. But yeah, you're gonna fuck.
He's
it
a proper out, atheist. He's like, I don't believe in it, but you know, maybe it'll work. Here you go.
I used to believe in God, but then my daughter died.
Yeah, he took my daughter from me.
Prick.
But he just kind of like lobs the arrowhead onto her grave. So then he goes back, he tries to sleep. I actually have quite a giggle at this scene, because he tries to have like a little nap, and the windows just smack, smack, smack. And you know, you see the frustration on his face.
Where yeah, as like, as a light sleeper, I can sympathise with him.
He's kind of like, he kind of wakes up and goes, I've got to fix this fucking window.
It's like when you wake up and there's like a dripping tap, it's like, I've got to go fucking.
Yeah, once you've heard it,
yeah,
you've got to, yeah. So he goes over and he starts cutting wood to fix the window. And this is where we get our first horn blow, which is his signal to say there's another
get on your fucking horse.
Yeah, there's a fucking monster here.
Come on, Dave, sort it out. I'm pretending his name's Dave.
Yeah. So he armors up and heads. And I just want to say, you know, before we get like, I know I've said at the beginning of the episode, but this armor is fucking incredible.
It's
like,
pretty cool.
Even for this, like, you know, the budget, it looks incredible. It looks just as good as the.
You obviously can't see this, ladies and gentlemen, but Vic has a massive erection right now.
Yeah, I do like some armor. I do like armor. You think I watch porn? Nuh-uh. I go and look up armor sets.
Charlotte gets annoyed. Are you looking at fucking armor again? Yeah. You haven't touched me in months.
Yeah.
Have you got some fucking
armor?
If you
wear some armor, you bitch. Like, I'd come near you, wouldn't I?
It's like a reverse striptease. Instead of taking like her clothes off, she's putting armor on. You're like, ooh.
Yeah. Put more on. So he heads off and he returns shortly after. And he's pretty fucked. He kind of falls off his fucking horse. He crawls in his house. I think he's got, you know, the first time we see him drag in one of the heads, he brings the heads in these big bags.
He always, like, chucks them in his room. Like, I can't be fucking arsed with this.
I mean, to be fair, like, as the scene shows, he's probably got more things to worry about at this point. He's like, I've already done this. Fuck the head. I'll sort that out tomorrow. It's kind of like when you come in from a long night at work and you're like, dishes need done. Fuck it. I'll do them tomorrow. So yeah, he's pretty fucked. He rips his armor off. He rips his helmet off, and he's got like he's been like ravaged.
Yeah, his shoulders left. Like
ravaged.
Buggered.
Yeah, like fucked.
I don't know why I said buggered. Buggered doesn't do it justice.
You
don't
know,
it's fucking worse. Buggered.
Yeah, I mean, he's even wheezing. So I assume that the whatever's happened to him has got into his lung. Maybe the claw or whatever, because yeah. It's ravaged. So I assume, because he comes in, he's kind of like, like he's even trying to breathe. So he unlocks his potions and he rubs this
shit.
Jar of shit all over his body. And it, you know, it hurts because he screams.
If anybody's listening and
you got one of these potions, a massive... give me one.
I mean, yeah, I was going to, if somebody wants to do a little experiment for us, and next time you're injured, rub some excrement on it and yeah. Tell us what happens. We'll give you a shout out.
You imagine, like, in the street, you see a guy with his arm hanging off, and then he's, like, taking a shit in his hand. What are you doing? I'm just putting my shit in this wound.
You've been watching too much Headhunter, yeah. Haven't you, mate?
Yeah.
Good film, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is a good film, yeah. But, I mean, your arm is hanging off, mate. But, luckily, in the context of this film, he wakes up the next day, and the potion seems to have nearly... I mean, I assume it does the rest of it for the days, but it's like one night and it's nearly cleaned
just
up.
Like in a real RPG. Yeah. But I'm inches away yeah. From death.
Have a potion. Feel fine good. Now. Feel fine now.
Yeah. Absolutely fine.
Yeah, in the morning.
Imagine that in the real world. Like, you got to go intensive care. Like, here's your potion.
It'd be great. I wouldn't mind going.
Cheers,
to the
NHS.
Doctors. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he wakes up and his wounds have, you know, healed near enough. But he looks like he's got a bit of a bad hangover from it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming these potions fuck you up a little bit. You know, it's like, yeah, I've healed your wounds, but I mean, you were nearly dead. So he gets up and he grabs the it's like wanted poster for the monster that he's killed. And he goes up to this book. And I really like this book. I think this book is one of my favourite parts of the film. And it's essentially
it's
like
very
a,
Necronomicon.
Yeah, it's like a medieval fantasy Necronomicon. But it's his like scrapbook of his wanted posters, and they're really cool illustrations of these monsters, you know, kind of like
it's the equivalent of Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, for monsters. Imagine that, by order of the king on Instagram. Hunt this. Yeah, the posters they have, the, you know, at the top, by order of the king, and he stashes these in his little scrapbook so he can look back in better times.
These are all are there ever better times for him?
No, I don't think so. And he collects the monster's head, which is some sort of hairy demon. I don't know what that is. It looks like some sort of yeti or something. I don't know. But he pikes it on his wall. And the camera kind of pans away. He kind of like admirably looks at his wall. He's like, oh, I've done a really good job here. And the camera kind of pans away and we see that there's like 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah,
like,
it's got quite heads. A collection.
They're all rotten as well, and you pointed out, you're like, that shed must stink.
Yeah. And the best just of it bringing is... back a girl, like, oh.
Yeah, I mean...
stinks in here. Can we open a window? Window's fucked.
It's open.
It's always fucking open.
It's fucking cold in here.
I ain't slept in weeks.
Can't do anything about it.
Why don't you fix it? Oh, I'll get to it.
So yeah, it cuts, and, you know, our poor main character seems to be having some discomfort at the minute. He's kind of, like, screaming out loud, and we realise it's because he's... Obviously, it's because he's pissing some black shit out.
I mean, yeah.
Who's not had to do that before?
Me.
Oh, wait, I've got horrific cancer.
I think you better go see a doctor, mate.
Yeah, I think so. Now, they don't like explicitly say what this is, but like my opinion is that he's pissing out the remnants of the poison.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, basically everything in the film you have to
work out
pay attention. Yeah, it's not he never looks at the camera. I'm pissing out the potion.
Yeah.
Remember the potion I put on my shoulder a few minutes ago in the film? I'm pissing
it's
it
like
out
Mac
now.
Narrating the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Nobody knows
I'm
what's going
on. I'm
playing
both sides.
Yeah.
That point, I was on top.
Yeah. That's actually one of my main likes of this film, is the fact that it really doesn't hold your hand.
Yeah.
You kind of
there's
have
no
to
way
it
for it to the sort of film.
No.
There's no character for him to feed off of and say, this is what I'm doing, why I'm doing it.
There's a lot of, you know, the film's like mostly world building in a sense.
Yeah.
It's half, at least 50% world building. And you're working this out as you go along through the visuals. Yeah, he goes and he ties his horse, Yake, I think his name was.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, Yake. He ties his horse up and, you know, this is probably the time where I'm most attached to the main character. And he gives the horse a little rub and he's like, we're okay. It's all good.
You're
not
going to
be for long.
In the world. I don't know what I'd do without you.
Yeah.
Remember, it was me, you, and my daughter. They were good times. That was just us. But at least you're still here.
Old Yaki. He goes and he collects some, I think it's some possum or something that he's collecting in his trap.
Taking cooking lessons from Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, yeah, as you do. Again, like, you know, there's a lot in this film, you know, like, until halfway through, you're kind of like, why are they... I know it's essentially showing me, like, the daily life, but, like, why are they showing you this? Like, why... We've already seen him eat. Like, why are they showing him his trap? And this trap does actually come back. A lot of the things that they show you, like I said... Eventually,
everything has a reason. Yeah, it's not really like, any you see wasted stuff, shots.
Yeah, you see stuff and you're kind of like, why did I see that?
Yeah,
and then eventually you're like, oh, that's why I saw that. So he goes back to, you know, he goes to sleep later on at night. This is one of my favorite scenes. He goes back to sleep. Well, he's trying to sleep in his cabin filled with candles and heads. I mean, I kind of understand that. I mean, you probably have got to light a few candles if you've got some rotting heads in your house.
Yeah. Are they scented, though? Do they have scented candles?
I don't think so. I think I was kind of like grasping at straws.
Get some Yankee candles, mate.
Yeah, can you imagine? Just going down to Yankee candles.
Got strawberry shortcake today. Yeah,
it's lovely. Maybe that's what draws the two visitors he has in this scene.
Nice candles, mate.
Yeah. So somebody or something or whatever like pushes his door open, I'm assuming to have a look inside. And he kind of has a look around. The camera slowly pans. And it lingers on the keys for the locks for his potions. Which leads me to believe that some of these monsters know...
Yeah.
He's got some shit in here. Like, let's fucking... Camera pans over again and we see a lovely face looking through the window. And it's essentially some sort of orc or goblin or something like that. And his mate's there with him and they're having a little chat about how they're going to rob this guy's house. I'm assuming because it's in Goblin. If anyone can speak Goblin, can you watch this film and tell us what you're saying? Just translate it.
Turns out they just wanted nothing but good things.
Yeah.
They were like, mate, we're going down the pub. Yeah. You want to come in?
He doesn't understand.
You're right.
So,
why is he hacking us to bits?
Yeah. He walks out.
Is that obviously fucking sick? I've told you goblins were fucking before.
Yeah. But it's another, I do like this shot though, it's another... You know, off-screen death, I suppose. It kind of shows the cabin in, like, shadow. And you just hear him hacking these fucking poor goblins to bit. I mean, I say poor goblins, but I mean, I'm assuming they were going to go in there and slit his throat.
You never know.
Yeah, true. Do you speak goblin?
No. I'm saying, I think he's just committed a hate crime.
Yeah.
He's just prejudiced against goblins.
Well, the funny thing is as well, the next time, he pikes the goblin's head. And in this long branch, and then like lifts it up, essentially a way to ward off other goblins. I guess I hate you, fucking goblins.
Essentially, what he's done is he's put a big burning cross in his garden.
Yeah, exactly. Ward off the rest of them. So as he's putting the goblin head up to ward off as a warning, one of the cooler little aspects of the film, you know, you hear like a growl of something above him, and he kind of, you know, you see it from his, well, not from his point of view, sorry, you see it on his face, and he kind of looks up into the sky. You see a shadow kind of come over his face, and you realise it's a fucking dragon. There's some fucking dragons in this film. It's like, wow.
It's a cool way to do it without showing it.
You're like, and the shadow, you're like, everyone knows what a fucking dragon looks like.
See, I thought it was a pigeon.
Yeah. I mean, I reckon, like, Game of Thrones fans watch this and get, like, you know, flashbacks. Like, oh god, the last season. Or they see a dragon shadow and all they get is that fucking dragon that gets shot out of the sky like three times. Three quick succession shots.
Yeah.
If I'm spoiling the last season of Game of Thrones for you, it's fucking shit, so I don't care. God, still one of my best... that was like entertainment. I didn't even watch it, by the way, listeners, but I followed every episode. It was incredible. The comments were incredible. Every time an episode came out that night, I wouldn't be watching a film. I'd be watching YouTube reviews of that episode and just seeing people go insane. Like, they didn't think it could get worse. So the old horn blows a second time. We see him actually make his steaks now, don't we? He's got like a little fucking like mincer for his steaks.
I thought he was just like collecting sawdust. Like maybe he's got a pet hamster and he's just filling his cage in. Like, no, he's making a fucking pike.
Yeah. But he nails the new like pike in the wall for his future head. And he heads off.
Heads off.
And we get one shot, which... If you pay attention, it does actually tell you what the next monster is going to be. It's a shot of the full moon, and we hear a wolf howl.
Yep.
And he returns with another head, and it's a ye old werewolf.
I really love how they do these little clever things of
it kind of got letting to the point you know where,
what the monsters are.
Yeah, it kind of got to the point where me and Trav were like, oh, what monster's going to be next? And like, what? Because it was all, you know how like goblins and, you know, the werewolf and everything, dragons, and you kind of like, these are all established monsters, but they're used in such a way that it doesn't feel, oh, you're using these monsters again.
Yeah.
You kind of like, oh, cool, he's just gone and killed a werewolf. Oh, cool, he's just gone and killed a fucking goblin or whatever. But he comes back with a werewolf, and he seems all right until he takes his helmet off and half his nose is gone. The werewolf's obviously got in a good dig on his face, and it's slashed him up pretty well. So the only cause for that is to put more shit on it. Obviously, he wakes up in the morning. Wounds are healed, near enough. I mean, he's got a fucking cracking black eye, I think.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, his nose was half off last night, so, I mean, I'll take the black eye.
Yeah, I'd rather the black eye.
Yeah. And he also gets up and moves his blood bucket over to the new head.
I don't know why. I loved that bit.
Yeah.
Just but like, this is just his morning ritual.
Yeah. Fucking blood. I'm sick of this.
Maybe don't have fucking heads piked you all then, mate.
I've really got to clean this place out, you know. Spring cleaning. He heads outside and we get a slightly emotional moment because we realise that poor old Yakke the horse has been killed by the werewolf. And he walks over to this tree and it's got like a horseshoe on it.
Yeah.
And then he staples the horse's reins onto the... I mean, obviously as a reminder, I think it's the tree that's near the grave.
That would make sense.
Yeah, yeah. I think he hammers it up and he carves this wooden horse. This little kind of like toy kind of thing. And he goes back to his daughter's grave. Tells her that the horse is dead.
Very like, bluntly. You like this. I mean, I get it. She's dead.
Yeah. And but he's very blunt. I'm guessing he's very depressed. And he's just like, yuck, he's dead.
Chucks the toy in.
I mean, I get it. I assume it's him trying to go, well, I've lost someone else now. Yeah. And I assume it's his way
of trying. I had very little to live for. Yeah. Now I've got nothing.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm assuming it's his way of kind of... getting over it quickly.
Yeah.
And going
yeah.
like, oh god, everyone I'm around dies. You like this next bit as well. The just after he's you know, he's told his daughter about it, the horn blows kind of like mid walk away. And he kind of just goes like, oh fuck. And you were even like, did he just say, oh fuck? I was like, yeah, I think he's a little bit pissed off that he has to go right back out again and he's got no horse.
It's literally
this time.
Like when you realise like, oh, fuck, it's 8:30. I've got to leave for work
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just got back, like, the night before. Got to go out again. This is shit, this is. And this is the first time we see him actually go and collect the wanted poster.
Yeah.
He goes down to this, like, tree, which they... So he goes to this tree. He finds an arrow in the tree, and it's got a, you know, the wanted poster wrapped around it. And he looks over, and you can see... what looks like some sort of King's Guard, maybe, or something. Or, you know,
they were dressed in, like, white or something.
Yeah, like, it looked like kind of like Templar clothes.
Yeah, because there's... Have we seen... There's, like, a big castle yeah. that he...
there's, like, a big... Which is obviously where the king lives, yeah. you know, by order king. And, you know, we're, you know, assuming that they're firing these fucking arrows off the top, just, like, to double-check. And my theory is that guy was standing there because he's probably taken a lot longer to get there than usual. Because his horse is dead.
Yeah, true, yeah.
So I'm assuming they're probably like, where the fuck is
fucking
he?
Dave's taking this fucking yeah. time, isn't he? We need this fucking thing killed.
Yeah. So he looks at the wanted poster and he kind of like, he's kind of shocked at what he sees. He's kind of like, oh, what the fuck? And then, you know, he rides off. And one thing that stood out to me is he breaks this arrow and he drops the arrow. And then it pans over and it shows that the other wanted posters that he's been collecting, he hasn't been breaking the arrow, he's just been sticking it in. So I guess that, you know, it's some sort of inclination to what kind of mood he's in at this point. He's like, I've found something fucking cracking here.
Yeah. So do you think, right, that these bounties are specifically for him or there's other headhunters yes. out there?
I think that I get the impression that he's like the castle's sort of gamekeeper. You know, like, you know, yeah. it keeps the pests out, keep it, but in this sense, it's fucking werewolves and shit. So I'm assuming, well, my theory is anyway, that they obviously, like, have a scout on the castle. There's a fucking werewolf over there. Call
give
fucking...
Dave a shout.
Exactly, yeah. And then they do that. Because it seems like there isn't that much around.
Yeah.
You do see him, like, you know, in the next bit as well. You do see him travel quite a bit, and there's fuck all round. Yeah. It's all, like, woods and, you know, nothing. I think he only finds, like,
the occasional dead animal.
Yeah, yeah. So he goes back to the grave of his daughter. This is where we're told the reason he was so shocked at the wanted poster is because this is the fucking monster he's been waiting for. And I think he says something to his daughter like, you know, it's back. This is our chance. And he throws the wanted poster on it. And it shows you this wanted poster. And the picture of the monster is fucking eerie. It ends up not being as eerie as it, you know, as it could have been. But I really like the illustration on this wanted poster. Yeah. Like, it makes the monster look fucking grim. Because it's essentially just like... The illustration, it's kind of just like a head with like sunken eyes in and you know, like really fucking sharp. You're kind of looking at it and it's kind of like, what the fuck? It's, you know what it reminds me of? I don't know if you know what I'm on about, but it's because Guillermo del Toro just did a film on it. It's that Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark or something?
Yeah.
The illustrations from them books
remind
me of this. It looks like something like that. So he begins a long travel, especially because he hasn't got his horse now. And
why don't you just hit the fast travel button?
Oh God, can you imagine fast travel? But on his way, he finds like this dead body, this dead skeleton. Most skeletons are dead, weirdly enough. And he has like a little camp there, and this is one of our little kind of, you know, kind of loosening the tension, little comedic relief. And he's sitting there and he's eating his dinner over the campfire. He kind of glances over to this skeleton and, you know, he's like, what got you then? And he's like, is it a troll? He's like, nah, you know, it couldn't be a troll this far north.
It's brilliant because I jokingly was like, when we watched it, I was going to have a little conversation with this.
Oh
my God, he has.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that stands out, it's very hard to understand. I don't know if you picked it up. But because I had to put the subtitles on like on my third rewatch to find this out. But what he says was he says what got your troll now? And then he says a little girl and the oath that I made her, that's what got me. And you're like, oh fucking hell, like Jesus, this got a little bit emotional. And then you hear this kind of like growling noise. He looks over and there's a giant fucking troll standing there. With his back to him, like he's just like kind of doing, you know, going out his business. And it's great because it just cuts back to the guy. And, he hasn't even got, like, any emotional aspect. Like, I'll deal with them all the time. He sees it and he just kind of goes, oh, maybe it was a troll. Like, fair enough. So the next morning he walks past this, it's a battlement of the cat. Is this the other side of the castle, maybe?
Must be.
Or is it a different castle? I don't know. But he hears, like, some...
I don't imagine there's that many
exactly,
castles.
Yeah. So I assume, like, he's had to walk around...
The whole perimeter. Yeah,
walk around the whole castle. Because he looks up and there's kind of, like, some music play. It sounds like they're having, like, a medieval party.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks up and there's a guy in the battlement and, you know, kind of like... It's kind of like the joke of, like, you can't come in, mate. It's a private party. Go hunt your monster. And he kind of looks at it. I'm assuming this moment is supposed to kind of imply, you know, oh, this is what I could have.
Yeah.
But now I've got
dead
fuck
daughter
all.
And dead horse.
Yeah, my horse is even gone now. But eventually he reaches the lair of the head. And it resembles Pride Rock.
Yes.
That's the only way I could describe it. It's like a horror Pride Rock. Really eerie place.
It's like also sort of a bit like Pyramid Head's
head. Yeah, it's like a more jagged, straight-edged Pride Rock. That sounds like I'm saying Pride Rock's like going out every weekend getting fucking drunk or anything. Like, oh, well, you know, he's got his straight-edged brother over here. You know, he doesn't go out. He does his homework all the time. It cuts again, and he comes out of like a river or a lake or something. I think the lake surrounds... the head's lair. I think when it shows you the shot of the lair, I think you can see there is water between it. So I think this is him coming back. And he throws the fucking bag. And you're like, you're kind of like, oh fuck, he got it. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, you know, you kind of think, that was the, when I was watching this film the first time, that was the one I thought I'd see. I mean, I know it does make up for it, but at that point, I was kind of
like, oh,
fucking hell.
Yeah, you thought,
oh,
this is
like,
the big boss. This is the fight we're actually going to get
like,
to see.
Fucking hell, they don't even show us this. I was like,
well, that's what I thought when, because you mentioned some sort of comment. I can't remember what it was. And then, yeah, it might have even have been in the top 10 episode when you were talking about, I swear you made a deal about how you don't really see the fights.
Yeah.
But they make up for it. Well, you said something along those lines.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, okay, this is... this is the big bad, this is where the money is.
Yeah, and yeah.
And it just does with like the werewolf and everything. It's just head in a bag.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, the first time I watched this, I was kind of like, oh. I was like, I kind of wanted to see at least one of them, do you know what I mean? You kind of go, but the film's shot so well and it's paced so well and everything, you know what I mean? You kind of like forgive it and you know, obviously there's more to the film. So you're like, why? Well, let's get on with it. Let's see what else they've got to give us. So he makes his way back home and we get kind of another little montage of him going home. And for anyone that does listen to movie soundtracks, this was my favourite song.
I was about to say, I loved the...
The soundtrack's incredible all round.
It's like very apocalyptic sound, yeah. Which always gets me.
Yeah. But it is, I think on the soundtrack, if you are looking for it, I think it's called The Journey. And then they do kind of like a redux at the end where they play another version of this song and it's called The Journey Home or something. So if you do listen to soundtracks, they're the two tracks you're looking for. But I highly recommend listening to the whole soundtrack because it's incredible. We get a really cool shot. You pointed this out. You see the Northern Lights or the is it Aurora Borealis? Borealis?
I was about to try and say it properly and I didn't. Aurora Borealis.
That's it, yeah. Where he's kind of like looking up, you know, like, I guess it's some sort of way of just showing you, like, you know, it's like, there are nice things in this world sometimes.
Not many.
No. So he arrives home and he throws the fucking head in as he does. And he heads straight to the grave and he kind of has that moment with his daughter where he's like, you know, it's
got
done.
The cunt.
Yeah, yeah. It's done. Rest easy or something, he says, I think. And whoops. And then we get the payoff now, the start of the payoff. The window, the worst villain of the film. The guy's accidentally left a more important jar on the windowsill this time. He's left his
I mean, it serves him right.
Yeah, it's like his immortal potion he's left on there. So the window does its thing. It's, you know, blowing back and forth and it knocks this jar and the jar finally falls. Everything spills out. Unfortunately, the potion...
falls all over the bag.
With the head in it. So he returns home afterwards. No, sorry. The head is revived, and this was really cool, I thought, because it's like the head's inside the bag, and obviously it's revived. The head starts, you can hear it, it's like coming back, and the bag is kind of like ripped, and this like what looks like, and it is, oh, spoiler alert, what looks like a spinal column.
Yeah.
With like a point at the end of it, it's kind of like, it's not shaped right, it's kind of like at the end of it, it's kind of shaped with a barb or something at the point, kind of comes out and drags itself away. He returns home a little bit later and he kind of comes, I love this bit, he comes in and he sees the head missing and he's like, what the fuck? Like, you know, kind of like, what the fuck's going on? Realises that the potion's fallen down, realises that the head's gone, makes the obvious, you know, distinction, grabs the fucking jar, what's left of it, and there's like a corpse of a spider that's on his shelf. He just hasn't cleaned up, you know, because I mean, he's got a...
Because they showed you it earlier as well, and there was a lot of emphasis put...
on this spider.
On the spider.
I mean, a guy with rotten heads probably doesn't do a lot of cleaning.
He's just a fucking spider. I mean, have you seen my wall?
Yeah. So what he does is he takes the potion over and he tests... Because I get what this point is, that he's only ever used this potion on himself.
Yeah, he doesn't really know how...
It works consistently. Like, he just knows it heals him.
Yeah, and I imagine he doesn't know its effect on actual dead things.
Exactly, yeah. So he puts the potion on, well, a couple of drops on this spider, and the spider fucking springs back to life. And he has this moment where he's like, fuck. And he slams the fucking spider again, which will become important. He slams the spider, killing it.
And then the spider comes back again. After he's left.
Killed it again, yeah. Like, he's brought it back, but he's killed it again.
Yeah.
And now it's still coming back. So it kind of, at this point, you're kind of like, oh, fuck, this potion's a lot more powerful than he even thinks it is. Yeah.
He should be selling this fucking potion, to be honest with you, mate.
Exactly.
He's in the wrong career.
Yeah. So he, you know, night falls and he's preparing his gear to head out again. He must be well annoyed. Oh, fuck, I've just done this. He's preparing his gear and, you know, this is where we get our first POV shots from the head. And it's kind of like outside
his cabin, wait, you know, I'm assuming it's waited for dark to fall, starts crawling out and it's growling, and then it's, you know, it starts repeating. It's like, Bardi.
Yeah.
Bardi.
Very like, eerie, the way.
It's grim. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, through the POV shot, you see this thing's fucking crawling towards the cabin. He does hear it. He goes outside, you know, he suits up,
doesn't he?
Yeah, he puts his fucking awesome armor. I mean, I'd be putting that out to go put the bins out.
Do you really need to wear it even, for the fucking bins?
Maybe even just a dressing gown and the helmet. I'd be like, oh, you know, I'm wearing the helmet. So he goes out, you know, he's looking around for this. You know, this is the point of the film where everything gets really tense. Like, yeah. All the shots are really drawn out. You kind of
This
like,
is when it becomes a horror film.
Yeah, like a cat and mouse kind of thing.
It turns from a fantasy to
proper full horror.
Horror.
He finds the empty bag that the head was in. And, you know, he's well wary of it because he, like, stabs it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, fuck, no, it's just a bag. I'm showing myself up here. So, he hears more noises and he goes back to, you know, I think he hears them. They're closer to the cabin now. And he's looking, and you pointed this out because you really like this bit. He goes through the cabin, he goes out to like the back porch kind of bit, and this is the bit where if you remember at the beginning of the film, it's the bit where the trap in the brook is. So he goes out onto his little like decking because he hears the noise, and he's searching around, and we get these really cool POV shots through his helmet. So obviously, like, we can only see like. And there's a lot cut off, isn't there?
Yeah, it's very...
Like, I mean, God bless these fucking... These medieval, you know, real-life warriors that had to wear these fucking helmets. Because that looks, like, restricting as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, it cuts off pretty much your whole peripheral vision. Yeah, he's checking these noises out. And this is where we get, like, probably our only... But it is well done. Because there's no fucking music in this bit, or very little. We do get a jump scare. But it's how jump scares should be done.
Yeah.
There's no build-up. There's nothing that's, you know, the music is going... And then it's just like, it is quiet. He's looking around the POV shots. And, you know, you see it from his POV. He kind of turns around. And this fucking...
It's just up in his fucking grill.
Yeah, this fucking head is like right in front of him. And it's this weird, like, humanoid kind of head. But it's got like a massive jaw of razor-sharp teeth. And then these fucking glaring little stubby eyes.
Yeah.
It's grim. And it, like, it screams at him. It generally, like, reminds me of something from, like, The Evil Dead or something. It, like, screams at him. And then, like, well, I'm assuming jumps off the decking. Because the next thing we realise is it attaches itself to the body that's in the trap. And then fucks off. Because he's, like, he's obviously got a body now. He goes, you know, he goes after it. And there's a short bit now where he looks around the woods for this thing. And this, you know, this thing's kind of, like, trying to... taunt him into it, you know, trying to get him to come in out, you know. This, I mean, the cool thing I like about this monster is that it's not a big fucking werewolf.
Yeah,
it's got to use its head. Ha, you know, it's hiding around like growling and trying to draw him in, and unfortunately for the poor Mr. Head, he gets caught in one of the father's traps, which is where that comes into it. You're like, yeah. Oh, the traps. And what the trap does essentially is it traps the body. So the head just detaches,
yeah.
And then crawls out.
So, okay, another fucking body then.
Yeah, and this is... I mean, the first time I watched this, I was generally like, no, no, you're not.
Because you even looked at me and was like, where do you think it's going?
Yeah, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the father essentially looks at this fucking trap, and I think he touches it with his sword, and then he clicks, and yeah. He's like, oh, fuck, this thing is attaching itself to whatever body it can find.
Yeah.
Clicks, and he hears the thing go body body, and he's like, don't fucking touch her. Yeah. He clicks, then he's like, the only body around here near enough is the fucking daughter.
Yeah.
So he legs it to this fuck. Doesn't get there in time, and this fucking head is you know, before he gets there, it's attaching itself to his daughter's corpse. Lovely. One thing that Trav pointed out as well when we watched this is that I'm pretty sure his daughter's corpse is already headless as well. So that would explain how this thing killed his daughter. It must have chopped off her head and then attached itself to it. So he must have already detached this thing from his daughter once already,
yeah,
and
maybe,
lost it.
Maybe.
So this thing, there's a horrible bit. You were, I think you said something like, that's a wonderful image. Where it's like, I'm assuming the head's kind of coming to terms with the body, and it's essentially trying to work out how it moves.
It's all like contorted and stuff.
Grim. And it's, this poor little girl's skeleton is all like, ugh. It's like on its
It sort of reminds me in Evil Dead 2 when Linda's body first comes out, and it's all just like...
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense with the ending of the film, which I won't talk about yet, but the head genuinely does have to work out how to move this thing.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a different thing. How do I move it? So he continues his pursuit of the head, and he reaches this kind of like, and I love the way they do this kind of final battle thing. He reaches this kind of cave, but it's more...
very narrow, isn't it? It's,
And this is how they get away with not having some flashy fucking fight. Like, he goes in and he can't get through. So he has to put his sword away because he can't have his sword out. It's too narrow. And he even has to take his fucking armor off. He unstraps his armor to even just get through. So he's going through this bit, and, you know, it's a tension film moment. He's going through this narrow space, and his, you know, his torch goes out. He's trying to light his torch back up, and you can hear this fucking thing. His torch goes out, though, and he's trying to flint it. I really like how he does this. I didn't mention this earlier, but he uses, like, his braces on his armor.
Yeah.
To flint the fire.
Yeah.
And he hears something. He looks up, and this fucking head with the daughter's body is, like, fucking spider crawling all over the ceiling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very in the background. It's very dark, and, you know, you see it, but I generally think it works better than seeing it full force. Do you know what I mean? Like, you look at it, you see the shadow of it crawling all over the place. You're like, what the fuck is... Like, kill it. Get rid of it now.
Yeah.
So the head, it jumps down and it begins its attack on the father. And even though it's very bare bones, I still think the fight's done really well. Like, again, the narrow space really
narrows down how
much you need to have going on at this point. And it also kind of, defeats that problem where you kind of go, like, how is this head formidable against this guy?
Yeah.
The short space gives it an advantage. This thing's small.
It's probably why it's gone in there.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
if I can go in here, I can fuck this guy over.
Yeah. So he's fighting with the he's fighting with the head, and he finally gets, like, this head, like, it you know, the it's grabbing at him, and it's his fucking daughter's hands, like, I mean, he's essentially fighting his daughter. Finally gets, like, the kind of upper hand, in a sense. Grabs the fucking head, and he kind of just, like, has one last look at his daughter's corpse, and he just goes, "Forgive me," and drags his fucking daughter's corpse off this head.
Yeah,
this head's, like, you know, the spinal column's, like, swinging around it. It pulls his helmet off. It tries to stab him, everything, and he finally, like, grabs it, pushes it against the wall, and he's got just enough space to get out his dagger.
Yeah.
And he stabs
the fuck,
like,
out
literally
of
about
it.
15 times. Yeah. Like, he just stabs. Of course. I mean, especially considering it's your daughter there that's it's been attached to.
Yeah.
Stabs the fuck out of it, and, you know, the thing's dead. It cuts now, and it has, like, you know, kind of like that little moment in the film where we get, like, a lot more colourful. There's a lot of it's a lot more of a colourful transition.
Yeah, I think it's trying to make you think, oh,
everything's
la-di-da
good now. You know, he's avenged his daughter. He's, you know,
the thing's finally dead.
Yeah, you made a good point though. You know, he goes back to his cabin and he drops the head, and you were like, I don't think I'd be leaving that laying around after. And luckily,
yeah,
he comes out with his giant fucking battle axe. And, like, near enough splits the fucking head in
half.
Two.
Yeah.
In twixt. He goes and he reburies his poor daughter.
Very shallowly. It's like, this is why this happened in the first time. Mate.
Exactly.
I might bury her a bit deeper now.
Can't be asked.
There's a reason we it's 6 feet under.
Yeah. But while he's burying her, he rediscovers the arrowhead.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like, you know, I assume is his last goodbye. This is his closure. I think he goes and he makes a bow.
Makeshift bow.
Yeah, and he makes an arrow shaft for the arrowhead. And he just fires it off, like, nowhere in particular.
Yeah.
He just points it up and fires it. And, you know, I assume it's like his way of saying, that's me letting my daughter go now.
Yeah.
Like, it's finished. Yeah. It's over and done with. I've avenged her. The arrow lands, like, it's a fucking shot.
Yeah,
like, it goes like miles. Yeah, it lands in, like, some sort of dead corpse. He goes back to the cabin. You know, he's kind of like, everything's, I mean, not hunky-dory, because he still lives in a cabin in the woods with nothing.
It doesn't sound so bad.
No, I mean, I'd love it, but, I mean, I'd want a TV or something, or a book. So he goes back, and unfortunately, the main antagonist, the window.
Well, he thinks, I'm going to finally fix this cunt window. Because you even hear him, like, chopping wood and
stuff. Yeah, he's sawing his wood again. And, you know, it's shot from inside the cabin, and we're looking through the window that's banging. So you can only see what's going on every, like, other second, because the window's swinging back and forth. And you hear a scuffle outside the cabin. You were like, oh, fuck, what's he killing now? You hear this scuffle, and, you know, through the window banging, you can see him walking back round to the cabin. The door opens, and he walks in. He walks over to his pikes, puts up the head, and the camera cuts. And it's not the head. It's his head.
Yep.
He's been decapitated. He's got his head put on a pike, and his body walks away. And there's this really cool out-of-focus shot where you see him walking, and it, you know, it dawns on you. You see this eerie fucking body, and it's got the fucking head.
Yep.
The head is back.
On top of it, yeah.
And I'm assuming that's, you know, why they showed you the spider coming back, because it's like, essentially, just killing it can't die now. Like, it's fucked. It's finished. And, you know, you can kind of, there's like little bits where its hand's twitching and stuff, and it's kind of like, you hear it, it's kind of like rolling words around its mouth, which is obviously him
being accustomed
to the body. And, you know, he walks out, and he gets into the doorway, and just before it finishes, the head looks back, and it just goes, "Body mine." And the door slams, and that's it.
Now, if this magic potion thingy doesn't just heal you, it brings you back to life.
Yes.
Does this necessarily mean that he's dead?
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I have a feeling. And the thing is, when he put one of the pikes on, I don't know if we mentioned... Did you mention this earlier? When he puts one of the pikes on, when he's going... I think it's the werewolf pike. He goes out and... No. It's the pike for the head. Because he goes out, it's the only one he hasn't used yet. And he puts the pike on it. And as he's pulling his hand away, he gets a splinter and it leaves blood on the pike. Now, there's some theories that I've seen, that I've looked up, because I was a little bit like, what? Okay, what does this mean? Like, what? Some people think that because he's cut his finger on there, he's got enough of the potion, because he uses it so often, that it's in his blood, and he's put his head on this pike that's got his blood with the potion on. So, essentially, if this potion works the way we think it does, he could come back.
But so how is he going to get his head off the pike?
Is he just going to be
stuck
head?
There forever?
Yeah. Or is, you know...
Which makes it even more grim.
Yeah.
Is it like, at least if he was dead, he could rest
but
in
peace.
But now
he's got to sit there and look at his failures. Yeah. But it's that kind of film. It's that kind of film where it's like every shot has about 6 questions.
Yeah.
And the world building's so good that you want to know, you're like, fucking hell, I want to know, like, what does this mean? What does this
the
mean?
The whole film is basically... world
build.
It seems like a prologue to a bigger universe.
This would be like one of the films that I wouldn't mind having an extended universe. Maybe not in that sense, but I would love other films set in this universe, showing us different parts, like what happened maybe in the castle. You know, you could do loads with this,
especially if they could get like bigger
budgets.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, they could do Game of Thrones properly.
Oh, don't. It's still painful.
Yeah.
Right, do you want to do your ratings?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a bit of a no-brainer because it was in my top tens. As a film, it's right up there with what I like. It's simple. There's a lot of, we just said, there's a credible amount of world building. An incredible amount. I think they do more with this than, like, you know, a trilogy could do sometimes.
In
world building. And it's all, there's no exposition. There's no dialogue to give you exposition. There's no exposition.
That's probably why there is so much world, because it doesn't have to waste its time.
Exactly.
I don't want to say waste its time, but
it doesn't have to do the
fights and the dialogue. And
it's got the chances to do the world building.
It shot beautifully in general, let alone for a film
that's
made for $30,000.
Yeah. The set design is incredible. The costume design is incredible.
Oh, did you like the costume design, did you?
I liked the armour a little bit. I don't know if I mentioned it. But
No.
And the practical effects on the monsters, again, was, I think, incredible. There was a couple of... there was one CGI shot, which was the troll, which isn't great, but they shoot it in the dark, and they get around the... They use their advantages around the CGI shots. I mean, but at the same time, like, this isn't fucking, you know, zombies. You can forgive that CGI because you're like, this guy's done so much with 30,000.
Yeah, it was definitely better than your first pick of season 1.
Yeah. You know, they get around with using the dragon, they get around with using the troll, CGI, you know, they get around with loads. And they build this really kind of I don't want to say beautiful because it is really a horrific world, but it is beautiful.
Yeah.
The way they do it. So for as a film, it's 5 out of 5.
Well, there's great like landscape shots.
Yeah, like it's all gorgeous. Like, yeah. Like there's some shots of the landscape that you wouldn't, you know, I mean, not to that extent, but like you wouldn't, you'd see in a documentary. You'd be like, you know, it looks like a you know, atmospheric shot for a documentary or something like that. So yeah, it's 5 out of 5.
Was it 2 out of 5?
Yeah, 2 out of 5. I hated it. It was shit.
You'd rather watch Knock Knock again. Is that what it is?
No. It's free pizza. That's all I needed him to say. Yes, it's 5 out of 5 for a film. I think it's incredibly done for what it is. I'm not saying there's not better films out there.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I give it 5 out of 5 as a film because there's so much that's gone into this film with so little backing it up.
Yeah.
And there's films, you know, that would have like, you know, 2 billion budget. I mean, not that much, but 2 billion budget, right? And you'd kind of watch it and be like, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like how much budget to Transformers or something have? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Where it's like CGI fest.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that was a horrible 2.5 hours of my life. I mean,
I don't think we've mentioned this film's 70 minutes long.
It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
There's sometimes where I get a short film, I'm kind of like, oh, I really wish it was longer. This film's pretty perfect in pacing.
Yeah, there's not any wasted.
No, it's every scene means something. That's like, you know, like we were talking about, every shot means set something. Up. There's something that's going on.
It's
with
like
the shot.
It's like a set of dominoes. Everything is in place, and then
at the end it all just topples away.
Yeah.
Fun factor: it's 5 out of 5 again. This is like I said. This is my right up my alley. Simple film, great world building. Great character. I was going to say characters then. Great characters, I suppose. Like there are a couple of others, if you can count the monsters and the daughter, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But the main character does a really good job, I think. His acting's incredible, especially for how much he has to emote without dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
I think when I looked it up, he's literally done like one of the film. Mm. But yeah, he was really good. So I think it's Alexander Rye. I'm sorry if I've got that wrong. I can't be bothered to get my phone up to have a look. But I'm pretty sure from my extensive research to this film, when's the sequel coming out? It's Alexandra Rai. So if you're listening, which of course you are, like all the other celebrities we mentioned, cracking job. I love this film.
Oh, really? I hadn't gathered that.
Adored it. And this is where Richard breaks my heart and goes, yeah, it was all right.
I mean, I'd rather watch Halloween 6 again. But
ooh, I mean, it did have Donald Pleasance in it. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, half a star.
You know what they could have done?
I don't have ordered this film again.
They should have had Donald Pleasance play the head. Not dead, but very much revived.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna give it a 5 out of 5.
Ooh, what for a film? For a film in general?
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking hell.
And my justification is, as a film, I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Right.
But
still
I'm gonna give it a half a star bump for its originality and another half a star bump for what it's done
with
its budget.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it doesn't look like a film that was made on 30,000.
No. Like, if you didn't tell me and you said, guess how much this film cost, I'd probably be like, don't know, $500,000, maybe $1 million, but $30,000?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, if anybody doesn't know, like, go look up budgets.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Even tiny films, it's like $1 million.
Yeah. It's unthought of, 30,000. Yeah. This got a lot of publicity because of that.
Yeah.
Rightly so, I think. Like, if we could give money, more money to directors that can do this.
No, that's what you think. Imagine what this guy could do if you gave him like $200 million.
Yeah.
Like, well, that would baffle my mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, by extension, I'll give the fun factor a 5 as well. It's nice. I don't think everybody will enjoy it as much as we
do.
It's not like a popcorn film.
I get the people that don't like this film.
Yeah, I do get it.
Yeah. I don't agree with you, but I get why you wouldn't like it. Nowadays every film has to have an action beat every like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
even good ones like, you know, that I've got to have stuff going on. Like literally nothing happens in the film until the last 25 minutes.
Yeah. It almost feels like you're watching like a tech demo.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like that. You know, this is what we could do, you know, if you gave us the budget. Do you know what I mean? I hope that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because, I wouldn't even, you know what I feel like, but I really wouldn't even mind like a remake of this film. you know, like with budget, you know, kind of like, you know what they did with the Evil Dead? They remade it with Evil Dead 2.
Well, there was a point in, there was a point not long ago where I had enough money to finance this film, but no, I had to buy a house instead. Yeah.
We had to live under shelter. Why didn't you just get a fucking cabin like he did? You
can't. If somebody said to me, like, oh, you can buy a house or you can finance this film, I'm
Do I have to have shelter?
No, but if somebody did say, like, do you want to buy a house or do you want to finance this film? I think I'll buy the house. You ain't going to make a film on 30,000.
Yeah.
What are you talking about,
good
mate?
Point, yeah. Yeah, but fuck off, 30,000, you cunt. This guy fucking has it. Is it Jordan Downey or something that directed it? He just walks off and he's like, give me 10.
Because even, like, there's like, a big tradition of, like, YouTubers making their own movies.
Yeah.
And even, like, there's a fucking Game Chasers movie coming out. And even that's like low budget, but it's still in the hundreds of thousands. They had to like crowdfund.
I guarantee it will look worse than this film.
Yeah.
Guarantee you.
Yeah. I mean, it might be a decent film.
Of it's course. Not I'm not saying it's not going to be a decent film, but like, I mean, I've seen bits of YouTube films before, and I'm like, don't get me wrong, fair play. You know, it's a cool little film, but you know, if you really wanted to be a game nerd movie. It was horribly fucking, you know, effect wise.
Yeah.
Awful. But, you know, the content's there. It's not about that.
Yeah.
But, like, if you could have the content there and deliver like this film did, I mean, these are the directors we want to be funding.
Yeah. You can't even buy cameras, like, movie-quality cameras for 30 grand. Yeah. Baffling.
Generally is incredible.
Right. Shall we wrap this up before we spend the next...
praising this movie.
Yeah, just next hour, like,
this will be the rest of this year will just be us
tune into our Patreon, where it's just going to be hours of fapping.
What are you fapping to? Still the headhunter. Oh, one thing that I liked as well, which was on the rewatch, which I didn't just before we go, the title of the film is a double entendre, because he is a headhunter, but he is really the headhunter. He's hunting the head.
The headhunter becomes the headhunted. Yeah.
And you know what made me laugh as well? He headhunts, and the main villain hunts for bodies.
Yeah.
Incredible. I love it. I really love stuff like that. But yeah, I'm done wanking.
Right.
I'm not.
group selection next week. Keeping with the theme of top tens, I guess, we're going to do my second favourite film of the decade.
What? Zombies? I'll watch Zombies 2's out now.
I wish I was dead.
It's got more budget than The Headhunter.
Probably does.
No, I'm not joking. I think it probably does. Yeah.
Hereditary.
Oh, yeah.
Join us next week.
Oh, yes. Or don't.
Yeah, it's up to you.
Don't really want to talk.
You're an adult.
I'm doing this for fun, not for you, you cunts.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.